Some of the worst crimes ever committed on school grounds can be credited to some of the worst parenting we've ever seen in the United States of America and possibly even the world. I want all K through 12 community members to brace themselves for the harsh realities revealed in this podcast. We're here to discuss punishing parents for school violence. You're listening to the Myth of Education podcast, where we expose corruption in K through 12 schools, advocate for student safety, and defend parental rights on school grounds. Be sure to like, share, and subscribe wherever you're listening so you don't miss an episode. Share your thoughts, good, bad, and ugly, by emailing feedback@mythofeducation.com. If you appreciate the content and want to support the broadcast, visit mythofeducation.com and click the donate link. No amount is too small, and just $50 a month keeps us on air. Visit mythofeducation.com and click the donate link. Thanks for listening. I want to kick off this episode by playing a clip from Arizona's family, and then I'm going to react to it. Listen closely.
A group of 10 and 11-year-olds, two boys and two girls, devised the plot during lunch and recess in October of last year. The plan was to lure him to the charter school's outside bathroom, stab him, and make it look like he took his own life. To get away with it, the documents state each child had a role to play. One would bring the knife, another would forge a suicide note, and someone would act as a lookout while the other carried out the stabbing. And they'd all wear gloves to hide evidence, like fingerprints.
Just for clarification, even though this particular report came out in the summer of 2025, it's actually referring to an incident that occurred in October 2024. There were four students enrolled in Legacy Traditional School in Surprise. They were arrested for plotting the murder of their classmate. The motive was allegedly due to cheating allegations that said there was a recent breakup between the victim, who was a male, and one of the girls who was plotting this. The parents of the victim, who said their son is autistic, never had a girlfriend. Now, keep in mind, these were all fifth graders. And if you're not familiar with what age that is, that's about 10 or 11 years old. And I just want to say to parents of preteens, if you allow your children to have quote unquote boyfriends and girlfriends, you're a bad parent, period. Now, Arizona's family said the police report revealed another student, okay, so someone not involved in the plot, overheard it and told their parents, and this resulted in a phone call to the school administrators. I just want to say shout out to that child's parents because you raised good kids. Well, the delinquents were arrested on misdemeanor charges. They were questioned with their parents present. They were suspended pending an expulsion. They were ordered to participate in like a de-escalation anger management type program, and then they were asked to also write an apology letter. The report says that there was one child, who I think was the ringleader, who showed no remorse, but was actually smiling and laughing during her interrogation. As of this report, the victim's parents said they had yet to receive the apology letter, and none of the parents had taken any responsibility publicly or privately for their children's behaviors. Now, here's my thoughts. Had these children carried out this plot to murder this boy, and I were the judge overseeing this case, I would absolutely throw the book at every single parent. I would fine them. I would jail them. I would publicly shame them. Because here's the deal. Suspending the children does nothing. It gives them a free vacation. And especially thinking about the family of the child who showed no remorse, I would want to know who's the psycho that's raising this psycho. And I would immediately try to remove this child from that family. I mean, I would look for every reason to remove the child because this manifested behavior at that young of an age, it's a problem in the home, not at school. Children spend the most of their time around adults and their family. So when children this young behave this way, I don't care what anyone says, it's always a parenting problem. 100% of the time, no excuses, full stop. If you know anything about me, then you know that I always try to lead every discussion from a biblical perspective. Although there are theological differences among us, I hope we can find some common ground on answering the question of whether parents should be held liable for crimes that their children commit on school grounds. Now, if you lack the capacity for spiritual or theological things, I may lose you for a bit, but just hang tight. Before the kids of Israel crossed over into the Promised Land, the Lord, speaking through the prophet Moses, issued a decree in Deuteronomy 5, 9 through 10. I'm not going to read that verbatim. You can look it up. But the gist of it is the Lord saying that he lays the sins of parents upon their children, the entire family, even to the third and fourth generation of those who reject God. This is in the context of idolatry. In our modern translations is the word iniquity, which in Hebrew, it just means perversion, depravity, moral evil. And understand too that this was in the time just after leaving Egypt, where idol worship was rampant. This brought a curse upon the bloodline. However, about 800 or so years later, there was a prophet named Ezekiel who also, speaking by the Spirit, basically says the person who sins will be held accountable. The child will not be punished for their parents' sins. The parents won't be punished for their child's sins. Righteousness or wickedness would just be upon that individual's head. Now, of course, this podcast is not the place or the time to discuss covenant theology or the idea of generational curses or generational disobedience, demonic influence, for more biblical sense of that term. Basically, it's sufficient to note that under the old covenant, entire families were held liable for breaking God's laws. There are several instances where a whole lineage was destroyed at God's command, mind you, because the father of the household committed an abominable sin. Now, under the new covenant, this is not necessarily the order in the way that God does things today, as we're all held accountable for our own sins. However, the logic follows that when a crime is committed, a responsible party must be held to account and punitive damages must be paid where applicable. Our Constitution is built on Jewish law and Christian principles. So in the case of the four delinquents at 10 years old, there's no way to hold them legally, financially, mentally, or emotionally liable to the fullest extent. They wouldn't be able to pay punitive damages or compensate that victim's family in any way if they had carried out that crime. And under our current laws, parents can be held liable for certain crimes committed by their children. Now, I'm not talking about petty crimes like stealing small items or lying, but serious crimes wherein a child's reckless behavior led to a loss of life and/or a crime that could not have otherwise been committed without their parents' knowledge or negligence. And such is the case in a couple of school shootings that we're about to discuss. I want to highlight a couple of high-profile cases that have taken place over the last several years. The first is Ethan Crumbley. He's the mass shooter at Oxford High School in 2021, which left four students dead. He was sentenced to life in prison without parole. And this is probably one of the most prominent cases, if not the first landmark case, of parents being criminally charged. So James and Jennifer Crumbley were both sentenced to 10 to 15 years on four counts of involuntary manslaughter. They can't be held longer than 15 years if their parole is denied after 10 years. The Crumbleys were found liable for dismissing clear signs of their son's mental illness. His condition basically had worsened in the days leading up to the attack. And they also were found liable for purchasing a gun that Ethan used in the attack. As of this podcast, the parents are still trying to appeal their sentencing separately. Sadly, the victims' families lost their lawsuits against the school district and will have to appeal. The facts of the case state that the day of the school shooting, Oxford High School officials were aware of a violent drawing that Ethan had created. However, the parents refused to take him home. The school didn't expel him, so after that meeting with the parents, he was actually allowed to return to class. No one checked his backpack to know whether he had a loaded gun on campus. And so the district basically said that it would review its policies and try to improve its practices going forward, which is a very tragic situation and 100% avoidable. The next case I wanted to mention was Colt Gray. This is the 14-year-old. He was a mass murderer at Appalachian High School. This left four people dead in September of 2024. So it's hard to believe it's been a year since that happened. And Colt will likely spend the rest of his life in prison. His father, Colin, faced four counts of involuntary manslaughter, two felony second-degree murder charges, and then eight counts of cruelty to children. In this case, the suspect was questioned by the FBI about a year before the crime had taken place, and this was after Colt made threats on social media. He should have been put on an FBI watch list, but that never happened, and no arrests were made. Colin also gave his son a gun, even after the first online incident and knowing that his son had issues. I think the mom might have checked out around the time all of this was happening. Something was going on in her life to where she was neglecting raising her son and was not in the home with the dad. Around the same time as the Colt Gray incident, there was a copycat 11-year-old who was arrested. His mugshot was plastered all over social media, and he actually took a perp walk. This kid had gotten in trouble for showing off several guns and knives on social media and allegedly creating a quote-unquote kill list that had fellow students and I think maybe some administrators on it. Thankfully, in that situation, the weapons turned out to be fake, and the police acted upon the threat. So that kid was also facing felony charges for threatening to carry out a mass shooting. The arresting sheriff was quoted as saying, "Parents, you don't want to raise your kids. I'm going to start raising them." Now, there's no word on whether or not this kid's parents were charged with any crime. I'm going to leave the articles in the show notes for you as always. And if your research has carried you further into the topic, you can always send me an email, feedback@mythofeducation.com, and I'll become an expert after I have listened to more experts. Now, I want to bring up an old case called Columbine. The school shooting incident rocked the entire nation. It's kind of like the O.J. Simpson trial, right? That low-speed chase in the white Bronco down the highway, it sticks with you for years. Doesn't matter how young you were, you remember it happening and you remember where you were. And once you go back and you start reviewing these incidents, things become more clear. About a year before the Columbine shooting took place, one suspect named Eric Harris, he was 18 at the time, he was reported to the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office for online threats, but the police failed to act on the warning. The other suspect, Dylan Klebold, he was 17, and he was said to have shown signs of depression and rage. And both shooters, of course, died during the incident. The victim's parents sued the Harrises and the Klebolds for failing to see what their sons were planning. And I think some of the planning took place in their homes, no less. The lawsuit was settled out of court. The amount was never disclosed, if there was an amount. Later, Klebold's mom wrote a book claiming to have missed all these warning signs and chalked her son's behavior up to just, you know, typical teenage moodiness. The New York Times article from the archives regarding the Columbine incident, the facts that are known so far about the two Columbine killers' families, several legal experts say, do not suggest that the parents had enough specific knowledge that a massacre was being planned to make an obvious case against them. And then this is a quote from Martin Guggenheim, who was a juvenile justice expert in the NYU School of Law. He said, "It's just too complicated a world to begin blaming parents under criminal statutes for the behaviors of their children. There isn't the kind of direct connection between parental behavior and a child's wrongdoing to justify punishing parents criminally for a child's wrongdoing. Since there was no evidence of the parents being linked to the crimes, they were never charged. My personal opinion, I think in each of these situations, even if parents can't be criminally charged, the parents should at least be held civilly liable, if not charged with negligence, for these crimes. It's very simple. If the child is living in your house, you are responsible. You are supposed to know what's going on in their lives. You should know what they're carrying in their backpacks, what's under their beds, who their friends are, how they're spending their free time when they're not at home. There is such a thing as having too much privacy as a child. Parents just need to understand that. In all of these situations, the pattern appears to be the same, and the signs are always there. There's moodiness, there's depression, there's withdrawal. And I'm sorry, but there is a profile of a mass shooter. There is a type who commits this kind of crime. We've seen this happen enough now to know what to look for. Stereotypes always have an element of truth that runs through them. and this is just my observation of the last 10 years, the majority of school mass shooters have been white males between the ages of 12 and 25. That was even true for Columbine. That's true for Ethan Crumbly. That's true for Colt Gray, etc. In 1999, The Washington Post, okay, a political magazine, not the FBI or another federal agency, but a bunch of researchers and reporters, collected and analyzed data that show a growing trend of young people committing school mass shootings. 3.7% of males carried a weapon to school, according to the data. 6.7% carried a gun. 2.1% of white students carried a weapon onto school property, and 3.3% carried a gun. Whereas 4.2% of black students carried a weapon on school grounds, and a whopping 7.1% carried a gun. Now, I don't want to turn this into an ethnicity or racial issue, but it can't be overstated that the black community has a problem with gun violence. It's not racist to say so. That's just the truth. Nevertheless, I've found that most of the time, black students who do open fire are typically doing so as a direct response to some sort of conflict with another person or group of people. But think about some of the worst cases of school mass shootings that you've heard about within the last 10, 20 years. Think about Uvalde. This is a person who was above the age of 18, who was a graduate of this district, went back to the middle school, not the high school, the middle school, and fatally shot 19 children and 2 teachers. It's the white males who are unpredictable that we're labeling as mentally ill. These are the ones that are indiscriminately opening fire on people, even toddlers who are completely defenseless. And a lot of times, these kids are bragging on social media and in group chats before these crimes are even committed. So we can only hope that law enforcement, the FBI, and other federal agencies start taking these things seriously when they're reported the first time. These kids and their parents should be investigated and held liable to the fullest extent. It's also a sad reality that we're seeing an uptick in mass murderers who are hypnotized by this leftist LGBTQ plus ideology. We saw this with the Covington shooter in 2023. She was a former student of that school, and she went in and killed 6 people, 3 of them children. This suspect was a female who claimed to be male. And of course, the leftist media tried to hide the manifesto. They don't want to admit that it's their ideology that's destroying society. And it's the same with the Annunciation Catholic school shooting that just happened in Minnesota, where this fool opened fire on children who were literally attending a chapel service and praying. This male claimed to be female, and his mother, his birthing person, as they would say, supported his transition. There's something going on in society. But this is not about mental health, as people on the right would have us believe. It's a sad reality that we have many, many people in our society who are depressed, they suffer from anxiety, they're living in isolation, they're on medication, etc. But this does not make them a risk to society. We have many functional, mentally ill people living among us who would never harm anyone. So I defy this whole mental illness label that we're so quick to put on these shooters. Something tells me that even if you are a schizophrenic, like the psycho that stabbed the Ukrainian refugee on the train, you still know right from wrong. There's still a moment where you have a choice of whether to take a life or let someone live. I think the insanity plea is a cop-out in many cases, and I refuse to listen to any defense that attempts to humanize monsters. Nevertheless, you listen to right-wing media, and they are very comfortable discussing this topic from a mental illness perspective, as if doctors and medication would stop mass murderers. But I think the only way to stop these people is to get them off the streets. I think if we made mental hospitals and prisons great again, we would have less of a problem. I also want to say, this is not a matter of gun control, as the left would have us all believe. These people are so Marxist-minded that they want a disarmed population, which would basically make us easier to control, and it would ensure that all the wrong people end up with guns. Conservative people who are pro-2A, these are hunters, former military people or current military people, law-abiding citizens. only people with these psycho leftist mindsets are the ones who would walk up into a place and indiscriminately just start shooting at children. Notice that those who want gun control are the same people who are hypnotized by the ideologies that are killing children and terrorizing society. It makes no sense. Many so-called Christians refuse to acknowledge publicly what this really is. This is a spiritual battle. America is a nation that's driven by sin, greed, perversion. We've kicked God out of all of our institutions. And thereby, this brings a curse upon the nation. Something evil has been unleashed in the United States of America. It is nothing short of demonic for a grown man or a woman to open fire on innocent children. You cannot make this make sense. That's not mental illness. This is beyond that. And what do you think would possess a group of 10-year-olds to plan the murder of their classmate and attempt to make it look like a suicide? This is beyond watching a horror movie or a violent movie or playing video games. Do we really believe that mental illness and gun control is the corrective action to take or the correct diagnosis for these problems? Unfortunately, this kind of violence and brutality, it won't stop. It will only grow and escalate. It'll probably claim more lives until our loudest voices in the church start calling out sin from their platforms. And we also need Congress to take steps to start criminalizing the ideologies that are driving people mad. Well, I'm a big proponent of free speech, but I don't think I'm an absolutist. And I think if we have media and people calling people Nazis and white supremacists and all of these words, this verbiage should have consequences. You still have freedom of speech as far as the amendment is concerned, but that doesn't mean that you're free from the consequences. And I think it should also be a crime to tell children that they can transition from one sex to another, that they have no soul, and that they have the right to rebel against their parents. But I digress. Currently, our laws really only punish those who aid and abet or actively participate in a crime. So while some parents can't be held legally responsible for certain crimes that occur on school grounds, they are always morally responsible. And in some instances, they are civilly responsible because the child is under their roof. Every single time a child shoots up a school, bullies other children, contemplates suicide, becomes violent, plots a murder, otherwise acts out inhumanely towards another human being, you can be sure they learned this behavior and these patterns from adults in their lives or the images that adults allow into the children's minds. Children are born into the world knowing nothing. They only have the environments they're in most of the time to influence them. When parents fail to take responsibility for their children's behavior on school grounds, school districts need to get more strict about suspending and expelling children. This would force parents to take off work and to deal with the issue. And it doesn't matter what kind of hell the parents raise, it's not the responsibility of a school district to tame a child. The responsibility of the school district is to educate the child. But we'll see how this all plays out. So I can't say that I've solved any issues on this broadcast, but I have at least shed some light on a growing problem that can be directly traced back to some of the worst parenting in the history of America. We have to pray and start doing some things differently in society. Otherwise, we will lose the next generation. Do you agree or disagree with my take? You can let me know. Visit mythofeducation.com and click the feedback link, or send an email to feedback@mythofeducation.com. Tag me on socials @RealTiffanyB. I drop new episodes every other Wednesday. Subscribe wherever you're listening so you don't miss a notification. Support the broadcast by visiting mythofeducation.com and clicking the donate link. To support my nonprofit, visit restoreparentalrights.org/donate. Until next time, you've been listening to the Myth of Education podcast.